Hi and welcome everyone to this new Data Row podcast episode. And today with me, we've got Marcel Tobler, the CEO of Swiss Casinos, and we'll be covering the topic of Switzerland. Since pretty recently, we've been discussing about topics from various different countries. Say, Finland was one of the appearances. Today, we're discussing specificities ins and outs of the Swiss market. Marcel, over to you.
Yeah, hi, Stan. Thanks for having me on the podcast.
So would you like to say a few words to our audience of about your company, about your position, etc., so that it kind of gives us an indication on from which point of seat you're presenting?
Yes, sure. So my name is Marcel Tobler, and I'm the CEO of Swiss Casinos since January 1st of this year. Prior to that, I was working for another casino group here in Switzerland, Stadt Casino Baden, where I started as chief financial officer initially, but then was also very heavily involved and responsible to build up loyalty programs and the whole online business with two online casinos and a technology company, Gemenza. And prior to that, I worked for PwC, an auditing firm, where I was also able to work 2 years in Las Vegas, where I really started my love for our industry. And now I'm overall responsible for Swiss casinos. We have 4 land-based casinos in Switzerland, in Zurich, in Pfäffikon, Schaffhausen, and St. Gallen. And next year, we will be able to open a new casino in the city of Winterthur that will be a very, very exciting casino. It's in an old hall where they produced train prior to that and since many hundred years. So that will be a very special casino, and we are looking forward to build that. And we also operate the second largest online casino in Switzerland, SwissCasinos.ch. And as an operator overall, we are the largest operator in the Swiss market.
Perfect. So in operating in these two verticals, one which is the online casino and the other is the land-based casino. And that would make for very good points to actually start with how, from your perspective, would you describe what makes Switzerland so specific compared to other markets, as you have experience also from the US, you have also like the broader perspective for any other different countries. So what is the characteristics of the Swiss market?
Yeah, so Switzerland, the land-based casinos in Switzerland got regulated 2002. And at that time, it was definitely one of the strictest regulation around responsible gambling. From day one, 2002, we had a centralized database of banned players that were shared by all land-based casinos. At that time, that was really unique. And still, the requirements in terms of responsible gambling is very high. We have approximately 10 employees in our group that only work on that topic and make sure our guests have a safe experience. And we also have a very large database of banned players in Switzerland. Since the regulation is so strict, and so many documents are required by the players if they play a certain level, that led to the fact that a lot of people are banned today in Switzerland. And it's very, very hard actually to get out of the banned database. A player needs to bring in all their financial information. They need to go to a psychologist. So a lot of work needs to be done if they want to get off that banned players list. So, and that makes, is one of the things that make this market unique, because it's really important that we find ways to protect the players, even if there are very high restrictions in Switzerland, and make sure they don't play in an illegal or black market where there is no such restriction. So the whole regulation around responsible gambling is definitely also historical, quite special in Switzerland. We also entered the online casino market late, so it only got regulated in 2019. 2019 was the year the first legal online casino were launched, which is quite late in Europe. Also made it quite difficult for the land-based casino to build up that knowledge to run an online casino, since we all know operating an online casino is very, very different compared to operating a land-based casino. On the other hand, we have currently much less restrictions on marketing campaigns. If I look at the surrounding countries, there are much more restrictions. Of course, we are not allowed to promote our offering to underage players or to banned players. But that's more or less the whole restriction we have. And now, but as you know, that leads to other challenges. Now, as an industry, we need to make sure that we kind of self-regulate ourselves so that we don't overdo the marketing campaigns, because then it's only a question of time when there will be a restriction in the law and the regulation. What's also quite special in Switzerland is the player value. It's definitely one of the highest player value we see on a worldwide perspective. That makes it also lucrative market, but of course player acquisition on the other hand is also expensive. We have currently 21 land-based casinos in Switzerland, so quite a high coverage if you look at the size of Switzerland. But it's important to note that we don't have any gambling halls. So the only way to gamble on a slot machine or on a table is actually to go in a land-based casino or, of course, in an online casino.
And so making a small reference to what you have mentioned, because we have seen pretty recently legal changes to the framework in Netherlands, discussion yep. also in Germany, with specific caps that are being imposed, which, like, sometimes one might say that make marketing redundant almost, because you have so many limitations. What would you name are the biggest challenges when it comes to the regulation in Switzerland? One thing is that you've got this list of banned players, something that is well established in the culture because it's there for already two decades. But is there anything other that you would name, that something that comes to your mind that you need to address on a daily basis that impacts your operations?
So generally, it's the fact, I mean, as soon as somebody plays on a certain level or visits our casino often, we are required to challenge their financial standing. And that, of course, leads often to the fact that they don't want to present the financials. Not everybody is very comfortable with sharing their tax statements and their income statements. So a lot of players are banned because they just refuse to share that information. And if we have, then obviously to ban those players. And now the problematic part, where I think we don't have a solution yet, but I guess generally the industry has no solution on that. What they do, they play in the black market. So by trying to help the player and protect the player from himself, we force now the player into unregulated and unprotected market. And I think this is something that bothers us. I think it's the problem is just out of sight, but it's not solved. And I think it's also an issue on a national level, that something we try to avoid by a law, which is the negative impact from gambling. And I think we all stand behind that. We don't want gamblers which have issue with it, which cannot afford it. But we need to find better ways on a more global level to then really protect those individuals and not just push them into the black market. But maybe that's, I mean, it's less a problem from Switzerland specifically, but overall, but because we have such a large list of banned players, it has a larger impact overall.
Yes, and what you mentioned has been referred to many times, for example, in the cases of Finland and Poland, where the model that used to be in place in Poland, it's still in place, where you have one state-owned operator that can actually monopolize the market. Similarly, in Finland, you've got one operator, the Veikkaus, and then you can see over the time that the channelization drops and drops yep. and drops, because people go out to the black market. And we speak about the different aspects that we want to protect the players. Therefore, you have like this idea of one player account. Let's say you got one operator. Let's bring in a licensing model, just like in Switzerland, where you have maybe a dozen, let's say, or 20 different operators, but they're using a common player account. So how would you actually challenge this statement that, okay, let's say we're taking care of the responsible gaming, we'd like to protect the players, but if I was a player and someone asks me to hand in, let's say, financial documentation, proof of fortune, maybe I don't necessarily want to show the details of my account, I just go play somewhere else in another operator. Then maybe after some time they ask me the same, I can go on and on and on and on. And how to actually address this kind of stuff?
I mean, that in Switzerland, this is not an issue, because once a player is flagged and we ask for the information and the player doesn't provide that information within a specific time frame, we have to ban it. And then the player is banned nationwide for online and land-based casinos. So, I mean, there is no, and I think that's the way it should be, there is no way by just not showing the information that a player can go to another legal operator in Switzerland. So I think that is covered. But of course, the player can always go to a black market operator outside of Switzerland with very, very little effort. And obviously, there are enough black market operators that are looking for Swiss players, since the value of a Swiss player is very high compared on an international level.
But that would be, let's say, a different story, because someone needs to make the effort to go to the black market, but legally, either to a physical location or going online to the operators. Once he doesn't provide the proof of fortune, let's say, it means that if you refuse to share the data, you won't be able to pay.
Exactly.
Say.
Exactly.
There you go. Okay, that makes for a very nice working system.
True, but of course it results in the fact that a lot of people get banned, and there is no concept on the how protect this player then from the black market.
Especially when you start to consider if this is a person who, say, refused to provide the documentation, or maybe they just didn't do it, not necessarily refused, but simply they forgot, or maybe they went on to another activity and the time has lapsed.
Right.
And then from decision-making perspective, from business perspective, how to differentiate those people who were really capable to play in terms of financial stability from their perspective, from those who simply didn't want to send the documentation just because, in terms of impact on modeling.
And we cannot differentiate, right? I mean, also we don't have the option to differentiate, because it's very clear, if we don't get the information, we have to ban a player. There is no room for judgment and oversight.
Mm-hmm. Now, also thinking to how different legal frameworks work for Switzerland, how would you assess the stability, or just the other way around, volatility of the legal framework? Do you have like frequent changes that actually impact your operations? Let's say that you need to adjust marketing strategies, marketing approach, or responsible gaming, different measures, etc. And do you think that there will be any evolution that you expect to happen in the upcoming future?
Yeah, so the law is very, very stable. In Switzerland, it takes approximately 10 years to change a law. And if there are sufficient people against a law, it goes in a public voting. So all adult Swiss inhabitants are able to vote on the law. What happened actually in 2018, there was a vote on the new gambling law, which would then allow for online casinos. And in June 2018, Swiss people did vote on that. And I think, thankfully, not only for us in the industry, but for Switzerland overall, they did accept, or 74% of the people that voted accept this law. But it shows, and we didn't know until that day, if we're going to be able to offer online casinos the next year, or if the law doesn't pass and we are again back at point one. So that process is difficult to predict what's the outcome. But once a law is in place, it's stable. But again, of course, if you want to change something, then it's disadvantage, it takes 10 years. So we have a very stable regulatory framework overall, and I think that helps when you know what are the rules. On the other hand, if there is new innovation that changes how things work, but also that is not something in Switzerland that's generally a fact, I believe, in the regulated industry, it really takes very, very long until something like that has an impact on the regulation and the regulation gets adjusted. That's the disadvantage. But I think also for a local player, that's much easier to handle than for a global player, because you have the people locally, you have a direct contact to the regulator that helps better to understand the fine details of the law. And also, it's not only the law, to be honest, but it's also the view of the regulator and how he interprets the law. And that actually may change. But it helps to understand that, to find ways how we are able to offer something or how we are able to do a certain activity. So it's actually kind of an advantage for local players if there is a very specific local law in place.
So as you mentioned, there's one part which is the way the law is stipulated and it's like written and published in the books. Mm-hmm. And the second part is the relationship with the regulator that can actually, let's say, consult or monitor the different measures and the approaches in terms of compliance. Yeah, there's working like a supervisory body.
Right.
And yes. Also, what? Yeah, please.
Yes, and I think obviously the regulator makes sure that our activities are in line with the regulation and with our processes that we have defined. But sometimes a discussion helps to understand where is the focus of the regulator, and that doesn't always align with our own focus. And if to understand that, we are able to develop solutions for problems that maybe fits in both views. So the regulator says, yes, with that way, we can do that, and we still are able to improve our operation.
Mm-hmm. And also referring to what you mentioned about the duration, the stability, the predictability of the law, it reminds me some other documentaries I've been watching about Switzerland, and maybe from a totally different industry, because it's infrastructure projects and railway projects. That's, for example, about the remodeling of the Lausanne railway station, that the yes. plans are already for 2040.
Yeah.
It's been under discussion for already a couple of years. Maybe
yes.
the rail station is at full capacity right now, but we already have plans that go for 20 years forth, which is also impressive. And we know that at least it will be a well thought through, and then it will serve
yes.
the communities. And what you would say are the different behavioral patterns or preferences that you observe maybe between different cantons and between different other parts of the population? Do you see like any specific patterns, similarities in how the players play or behave?
Yeah, so I mean, we have different cantons in the same language region, and they behave pretty similar. But of course, we have three language regions in Switzerland, which is the German-speaking part, the French-speaking part, and the Italian-speaking part. And there, of course, the culture is quite different. And that's just because how you get influenced by the neighboring country speaking the same or very similar language. Like here in the speaking German-speaking part, we have Germany. And of course, when I was a child, we always watched German TV. Because I think we only had one channel from Switzerland, but all the cool movies and everything was from German TV. So you get very familiar with the culture and you kind of cope with that culture from the neighboring country. So I think we are probably closer to a German culture than we are to the culture in the French-speaking part of Switzerland. And the French-speaking part of Switzerland is probably closer to France, and the same with the Italian-speaking part, which... I think it's something really nice in the country. It's really interesting to experience these different cultures. So I really enjoy it. And it's sometimes surprisingly how good it works still to run the country if you have three different cultures within it. But of course, there are also challenges, specifically in the advertisement area. So an ad that we in the German-speaking part may find funny, French-speaking part doesn't understand it, even it's translated in French. So it's really important to have people on board that really understand the culture. So it's not only a language, so it's not only about translation, it's understanding the culture in the different areas.
So personalization, which is something that everybody likes to discuss and showcase, will mostly affect the linguistic differences. Is that right?
I mean, currently, yes, but if it is done right, it should be more complex than that, right? I mean, you have, it's not about just the language, it's also how you behave, what you do, when you eat dinner, when you're on the mobile phone. So there is much more than just the language. But I mean, I'm not saying we are there taking that into proper consideration, but that's what should be achieved long term.
I also know that at Swiss Casinos, you've got a very strong position in Switzerland. And all you know, when we say what matters, we always mention and boil down to the three things, which are the acquisition, retention, and reactivation. So what's your approach and differentiator, for example, when it comes to the acquisition or retention? What's your secret sauce?
I don't think there is a secret sauce. At the end, it's the tiny, small work and step and learnings you do every day. I have never met a person, let's say in retention as example, but I think it's true for everything. In retention, if you design a campaign, press enter and the campaign is live and you have this amazing success and find that secret sauce. I don't think that happens and that doesn't work like that. So once you launch a campaign, it's really then how much time and effort you invest to test the campaigns, to do A/B testing, to improve the small tiny things which make it better and better. So it's really extensive work that goes into that optimization process on a daily basis, which then at the end, if you look at it, it looks amazing and it looks like a secret sauce, but the truth is it was year-long work to improve the system and to optimize it so it works best for your region or for your segment of player.
And also, because we have discussed briefly previously about the responsible gaming, and there's controversial statement. I mean, some agree, some disagree, that you always have the trade-off between the marketing activities and social concept or responsible gaming, that the two teams have, let's say, conflicting drivers. And how do you assess, from your perspective, what's the business impact of the social concept measures that you need to undertake?
I strongly believe in this industry, regulation and measures for responsible gaming is really important. And I also think it's, I wouldn't be in this industry if we wouldn't have that. I think you have a certain responsibility. I'm also in the society, so I think it's absolutely right that that is the case. And I think there shouldn't be a trade-off. The trade-off is only because we probably don't do it well enough. But the idea that you protect your player from a short-term unhealthy behavior so that you support a long-term healthy behavior is a good thing for business. And that's what we need to achieve. I do believe there are a couple of challenges which sometimes result to the fact that it hurts business. But that's on one thing, I think that's because we act too late. We act when it is too late and the player already has a big issue and there is no way he can improve. And I think that's just it's because we have to follow regulation and that regulation puts the focus at that specific point. But I do believe technologies are now emerging, especially with AI, which will help us or should help us in the future to detect that earlier. At the stage where the player behavior is not problematic, but it shows signs that it could develop in such a way. And I think if we can interact with the player in such moments and avoid that he develops problematic behavior, then we really have a win-win situation, which is really good and the right thing for the business. And I think the other part, it's a personal relationship, especially in the land-based casino. You know, if you look into the future, I truly believe there is always a demand for land-based gambling. If we do it properly as a land-based casino, I mean, if you just put slots in a hole and a door, that is no longer needed because that you can do at home in your private chair. But if we create a place where you can interact with people, I truly believe this is something humans want to do by nature, interact with each other. If we have a place where that is possible, where you have a great atmosphere, we also need to make sure we have interaction with our players so we get to know them. Because only if we know them and have a relationship, we will be able to get the documents we need to verify if a player can afford it or not, so that we can avoid losing players just because they don't want to bring in the documents. And a relationship also helps to detect earlier if a player may create problems or if he has issues, so we can also in that area act earlier and talk to a player.
And there's this popular belief, and I'm curious to hear what's your take on this based on what you just mentioned, that casinos always gain most of the money on those that are the hard gamblers and those that are, let's say, displaying pathological behavior. And what's your take on that?
Yeah, I do think that gets confused. I mean, the truth is, but to be fair, that's true in every business. I haven't seen a business where that is not the case. A small percentage of customers, in our case players, are responsible for a large percentage of the revenue. And it's pretty much true for every business I have seen so far. 20% of the customers make 80% of the revenues. And maybe in our business, 5% of our customers make 50% of the revenues. However, realistically, for the Swiss market, all those players, those 5%, that make that 50% of the revenues, they all have checked, because they have been checked to ensure that they can afford what they play. Because you cannot play in Switzerland with such high amount without that verification. So I think what you said comes from the idea that a small percentage make a lot of revenue and that everybody that plays a lot has an issue, which is not the case, right? We have different circumstances. Some people also buy a champagne for 300 bucks a bottle, and other people just don't understand how you can spend more than 25 Swiss francs for a bottle for a drink. And it's difficult to explain, but I think that's the same about gambling. And maybe gambling, it's even harder to understand for the large part of the population, because it's an activity that doesn't make sense from the outside, right? You have an activity where you know you're going to lose money on the long run and you still do it. But if we talk to our guests, there are various reasons which make sense if you know them, why they enjoy doing that. And if they have the financial capacity to do so, I think that's fine. We just need to make sure as a provider that we are sure that those that spend a lot in our properties and in our online offerings, that they are fit to do so.
So as long as they can afford, and this is not coming from money laundering, then
exactly
yourself. One final question from my side. We both know that in order to stay ahead of the game, you always need to invest, you always need to look forwards to implement this forward thinking. And from the technology and data perspective, what are your plans? How you'd like to utilize data and reinforce your business, allow the expansion thanks to data and analytics?
Yeah, something we are working on right now is to implement a proper loyalty program. So we plan to launch that next month in the first property and expand that. And also that will be the basis for an omnichannel experience in the future. So our loyalty program will be the glue that keeps together what we are doing in the land-based business and in the online world. And I think it's really important that we work actively to have that omnichannel experience. I know the word is misused actually too often, but I think the two channels actually complement each other in a perfect way. A lot of people feel not safe, are afraid to go into a casino because they don't know how to play slots, they don't know how to play blackjack or roulette. And when I talk to them, why have you never been with us? I don't know it. I'm afraid other people see me and make comments. But however, it's really easy to learn the games in the online casino. But to have a really cool experience, I think that's something we could offer in our land-based properties. Of course, we need to create that experience in the land-based properties. And we need to invite the player actively to our land-based properties. We just did an event actually last Friday and Thursday in our casino in St. Gallen and Zurich, where we invited land-based and online guests to the same event. And actually they got a free custom-made jeans. It was a really cool event. And it was so interesting to see how those different groups, often you look at that, like different clients, land-based and online, how well they interact and how good the atmosphere developed, how happy they played on the blackjack tables. It was a very cool experience, and I think it will work to bring both segments together if we actively work on that. And this is definitely a focus to make sure we create a place also for our online guests that they can have an experience they don't find online, and that we show to our land-based guests that if they are not in our casino, that there is still a way to play their favorite game at home when they don't have time to visit us.
So custom-made jeans, did they get it right?
Yes, yes. So I think that was really cool because normally it's not something you can buy. So we had a company from Mississippi, US, flying into Switzerland and giving that possibility to our guests. And they are really nice
really
jeans.
Cool. Sounds really exciting. I'm sure it was bringing a lot of enjoyment.
Yes.
To the guests.
This is an experience, right? If you invite the guests from an online casino, such an experience you cannot create in the online world. You can have the best personalized offer by email, by every channel, whatever. I strongly believe an experience like that is impossible to replicate online.
Better than the metaverse.
Definitely, definitely.
Okay, perfect. That's going to be it for today. That was my last question. Thanks a lot, Marcel, for all your answers, for staying with us.
Thank you, Stan. It was a lot of fun.
So, wrapping up for today, we have covered the ins and outs of Switzerland, starting from legal framework, regulatory aspects, talking about marketing and different interesting initiatives at Swiss casinos. So that's going to be it for today. Thanks a lot, guys. And remember, keep rolling with the data. Cheers.